Here we are. It's the All-Star break. Every team puts 50-odd games or so into the rearview mirror and looks forward to the rest of the season. Now here in Montreal, does that apply? Along with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo, Mitch Melnick with you until 7 o'clock. He is not in Nashville. He is going to Nashville for the All-Star game. A lot of people are already in Nashville. Some arrived in Nashville yesterday for the game on Sunday. That means 6 nights in Nashville. I would not survive 6 nights in Nashville. If I was down there covering the All-Star game beginning last night, like some of these lucky people, I would not return. Not because I wouldn't want to. Pierre Maguire standing by.
Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Montreal's messiest sandwich, Dagwood's Chili Dag, with pepperoni, cheese, peppers, onions. Dagwood's famous chili and sauce comes with a bib.
Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo, and Pierre Maguire at home. How are you?
I'm good. Just home from Los Angeles, redoing my suitcase, going to watch a youth hockey practice tonight, and then flying to Nashville tomorrow.
So you're pacing yourself.
Yeah, you know what? The guys that went early, rookies. I'm going to steal something from my good friend Red Fisher.
Yeah.
Rookies.
Yeah. Or hey, look, if the people I work for wanted to send me there on an expense account.
You don't need much of an expense account in Nashville. Just pull up a chair at Legends or Tootsie's. Yeah, you don't need an expense account there.
I heard you guys talking about it last night during the broadcast, which we'll get to in a second. But it came down while we were talking to Ray Ferraro about an hour ago. Dennis Wiedemann suspended indefinitely.
Oh, for sure.
And the question is, you know, what will it be once they get around to an actual number?
I think the low will start at 10. I think that's the low side of it. Here's a question I have. I was talking to Stu Hackel about this today when I got off the plane. I called Stu right away.
Tom Lysiak.
What did Tom Lysiak get when he tripped the linesman on a face-off play?
I remember.
Did he get 20?
I thought he got 20. I'm not positive, but it sounds right because I spoke to Knuckles about that very briefly before he spoke to Carey Fraser.
Stu and I were talking about today. So if that was 20, which was just a trip.
Yeah, why don't you try it? Can you guys find that? Because I'm sure Rod and Gallo here and a lot of younger listeners have never seen it. Maybe they never even heard of it. It was a very,
Lysiak, they're saying.
Yeah, who's Tom Lysiak? He was a pretty good centerman. He's the kind of guy the Montreal Canadiens could use right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Very much so.
20 games.
20?
It wasn't 20. He tripped. He purposely did it. He was agitated, and he purposely did it, and he got 20 games for that. This is worse.
Oh, this is much worse. But that's why... I'm just saying, I think it starts on the low side at 10, but I think it probably goes up from there. But I'm going to say 10 is the minimum.
Now, as you know, there are a lot of people trying to excuse his actions.
No.
Like he was dazed and confused.
No.
I mean, he saw stripes in front of him. He just doesn't get out of the frickin' way.
Here's what I would like to know, and I'm sure that they're aware of this. Donnie Henderson, the linesman who got hit, his brother, Archie Henderson, was one of the toughest guys that ever played in the minor leagues. Archie is a minor league legend and has been a pro scout for a long time. But Donnie lives in Calgary. He does a ton of Calgary Flames games. I'd like to hear if anything had transpired between those two on other dates, in other games. That's what I'd like to see, if there's anything to that. Maybe there's a carryover. But no, that wasn't good. And you know what, Mitch? It's scary. Dennis Wiedemann, I'm telling you right now, ask some of his teammates from Boston in particular, popular guy, good guy. People like him a lot.
Yeah, but as you often say, good people do bad things. Yeah,
he's a good person that did a bad thing. That's a bad thing. I just spent 25 minutes in the car talking to my son, saying if you ever do that, this is the message I gave him. I said, if you ever do something like that, the league won't suspend you. Dad will. You'll be done. You can never, ever, ever touch an official. Ever.
Go ahead, Rod. You were going to jump in there.
Well, yeah. If they find anything, any type of premeditation in this deep background, Pierre, that'll add games significantly.
Well, that's why I'm saying. That's why I think this is going to be the interesting detail work that the league's going to have to do. Because I can tell you, I'm sure a large portion of his games, Don Henderson's games, involve Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver. I'd be willing to bet that's a huge percentage of the games that he does.
The linesman down at center ice. There was a collision there between one of the Flames.
Obviously, I took a pretty hard hit and down in the corner and had some pretty good pain in my shoulder and my neck. And I was just trying to get off the ice, and I was kind of keeled over. And at the last second, I looked up and I saw him. And, you know, I couldn't avoid it. I think I went up to Donnie and I apologized to him on the ice. I didn't see him. I didn't know where to go or how to get out of the way of him. And I didn't realize, I think, throughout my career, I've been around for a few years, and I think I've treated every official with the utmost respect, and I would never intentionally try to hit a linesman or a ref or anything like that, and it was completely unintentional, and I already apologized to him. So,
all right, so like he made it sound there that that should be a closed case. I apologize. So
no, the apology is great, and I really believe it's sincere. I do, knowing the player, knowing the person. That being said, it still, you can't. That's got to be punished.
And the league's got to defend its official.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it's got to be punished.
No, but optically, if they didn't do anything, it would be... Of course he's going to be suspended.
Hold it. Let's go optically through a few things. Ronaldo on Couturier, bad optics. Ryan White with some shenanigans, with a high hit, doesn't get anything. So that's why when you ask me how many games, I don't know, because sometimes things... When you think you have the perfect case, nothing happens. And then when you think you have the imperfect case, oh, this guy's getting 6 games or 7 games. So you just don't know.
A lot of talent on display in the game that you did. The Kings, I don't know, to me, you know, as you know, I'm up late, so I love getting the opportunity to watch Kopitar and the Kings. And lately the Sharks playing really good hockey too. But it seems to me that sometimes – I think they know they're so good and so solid, they get bored.
The Kings?
Yeah.
You nailed that. That's what happened last night. That first period, I called the producer who was doing the game, Matty Marvin, who I've worked with for years. I said, Matty, you better have a lot of extra tape built because this could be a really long night. I don't know how Colorado's going to get through this thing. I mean, that wasn't even fair. What were the shots after the first period? 17-4? 18-4? I mean, it was utter domination. That was scary. Calvin Pickard played as well as I've ever seen him play. He was a huge story the entire game. But then they let their guard down, and I give Patty a lot of credit. Patrick Roy, he coached a really good game, never got negative once the whole game, Mitch. And he made a subtle little line change, and he put Jerome McGinley up with the big guys. He took Grigorenko off the line with McKinnon and with Duchesne and put Jerome in there. Jerome's been playing as a fourth-line right winger, by the way. And he put him up on the first line and made a huge difference for their team. Huge
save, rebound to the side. Score! Gabe Lund. Duchesne ran man with a shot. Score! Matt Duchesne short side, and just like that. Far side, Holden, centering pass, McKinnon to the near side. Soderberg looks, holds, backhand shot, knocked far side shot. Score! Nathan McKinnon!
And that was the game winner. And Pierre, so you it's obvious, you know, we're like the situation in Colorado, they have what the Montreal Canadiens, for example, desperately need. Right? They have high-end offensive talent.
Well, they got two centermen that can really produce that. And actually three, because Duchesne's a center, even though he's playing right wing, McKinnon is a center, and Soderberg's a center. So they got three guys that could play down the middle that are just manufacturing tons and tons of chances. So absolutely.
So when do they get the rest?
It makes it easier for everybody else to play. And Johnny Mitchell, by the way, Johnny Mitchell's playing fantastic hockey for them. He's one of their depth center icemen. He's playing great hockey for them.
You know, all that talk early on about Duchesne being dealt certainly has quieted down. How else do they fix what's ailing the rest of their game?
I think that they're a very real player for Drouin. I really do. And if they get Drouin, that changes a lot in the West, I think, because Drouin, McKinnon, the year that McKinnon was MVP of the Memorial Cup and the leading scorer in the Memorial Cup, it was a lot of McKinnon, but it was a lot of Drouin, too. Those guys are like peanut butter and jelly. They really work together. They really do. So if they ever got him, that changes a lot. And I got to believe, again, I spent the last 40, until today, previous to today, I spent the previous 48 hours with that group, a lot of time with their team and their coaches. And, you know, they have a vision for how they want their team to play, and part of it is being a super aggressive offensive team.
Let me just throw this in, because yesterday I pointed out that agent provocateur Alan Walsh has been conspicuous by his absence during the Drouin holdout, and it was I was led to believe that he would return today, but I also didn't think that he would come on the air and speak publicly until Jonathan Drouin was traded, so I was thinking that maybe we'd get a deal, and then was informed late this afternoon that he could not come on the air yet. So that tells me that that a deal hasn't been made. Maybe he thought a deal would be made. I don't know. I'm reading into it. But I would imagine they're very, very close if he thought that he would be able to come on the air today.
I'm not going to speculate on that, but I would say that there's at least two, and maybe more, but at least two that I'm privy to, teams that have made pretty significant offers to Tampa to get the player.
But you mean like
there are two
more recent offers than
one is a two-component deal. So you're trading two pieces to get one, but they're two good pieces.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, I don't know how many components are involved, but they tell me that it's a very, very solid deal.
So Alan Walsh's agent provocateur segment will return as soon as Jonathan Drouin is traded. Mitch Gallo?
Well, Pierre, just because you're talking about Colorado's depth down the middle, I'm just wondering what you think about Mikhail Grigorenko, just because, you know, he's a guy who didn't work out in Buffalo. People thought he would maybe surge with Patrick Waugh with their time together with the Ramparts. He was supposed to be a top 10 pick in his draft year. He's a big player. He's been healthy scratched. Do you think that could be an option teams would look at if they need help down the middle?
Nah, I'm not sold on that one. There's a lot of work that has to be done there. There's a reason why he was a slider and why he slid. And when Buffalo took him, I said that on the draft. I said there's a reason why this player's sliding. A lot of it has to do with work habits. There's not enough jam in his game right now. When the going got tough in that game last night, he was sitting more than he was playing. Patty ran a real good bench last night. I'll tell you what, there's a lot, and again, I'm not trying to rekindle old feelings for Canadiens fans, but the way Patrick coaches, there's a lot of Pat Burns in him, a ton, and I coach a lot of games against Pat. There's a ton of Pat Burns in him. I see him coaching. There's a little bit of Mark Crawford in him with the fire and brimstone. Pat's taken a lot of the things that he learned from coaches that he worked with, and he's put them to good use. I'm really impressed by, especially spending back-to-back games with him, how he manages his bench, how he delegates to his assistants, Timmy Army in particular, and Dave Farish. And I see if they make the right move, they could be a dangerous team, especially if Varlamov comes back and plays.
There are a lot of people wonder about his ability to coach, and I guess people forget that he's still learning how to coach at the NHL level, like a player.
Yeah. And that's why I said he ran a really good bench last night. If he doesn't run a good bench last night, Patty knows they don't win that game. And so you were probably watching at the end. I told our director, Lisa Salzer, I said, hey, Lisa, you got to show Patrick's reaction at the end of this game, because I know how intense he was during the whole game. But you never came across with the pictures, because he understands you got to keep your composure. And at the end when they won, you just see him let it out. He was so excited. It was great.
About an hour ago,
as much as they've been loath to make a big move, I think they almost have to put a strike into the middle of the dressing room to make things look and feel and seem different. Because what they've got now is, you know, it's quickly frittering away.
Before heading to the driving range with his 9-year-old son for the break, our last conversation until next week with Ray Ferraro. Pierre, you know the state of Canadiens fans right about now. I think it's gone from anger and frustration to almost resignation at this point.
Apathy sets in, it's bad.
Yeah,
that will never. I don't believe that will happen in Montreal. I don't. I just don't believe the Molson family will allow that to happen. I don't think Mark Bergevin will allow that to happen. I don't think Michel Therrien wants that to happen. So I think there's enough resolve internally that I don't see that happening. I don't think the team will allow that to happen. But I said it to you yesterday. So what Ray was saying, I completely agree with. They cannot, whatever plans they had for the All-Star game break, if they had any, those should have been scratched right after they lost the second Columbus game. Sorry, boys, We're brainstorming. We have work to do.
You talked about your time in Hartford the other day, Pierre, and for Michel Therrien, whether he's flying to a beach or whether he's taking some time, whatever he's doing over the weekend.
Well, he should take some time, frankly. I mean, whatever you feel about him, he needs to take some time. Pierre's talking about the management group.
I'm talking about the management has to have plans going forward here.
I'm talking about the coach here. Over the weekend, he's thinking about the situation. And if, as a coach in a losing situation, if you get to the point where you feel that you don't have the answers personally, is that about as low as you can get from a coaching perspective?
Oh, boy. That's tough. When, you know, I remember once, and I won't tell you the general manager, he says, we're going to play with the players we have in this dressing room, and we're not making any more changes. I'm sitting there going, I signed up for this? Like, we're not good enough to compete in this. There's no possible way. And because that manager wanted to try to enhance the draft position of the team. So he was saying, okay, well, we're going to have some short-term pain for long-term gain. Well, coaches get caught in the crossfire in those kinds of situations. I cannot believe that would be the mindset of Montreal, but it's a very frustrating thing when you know that your management is saying, okay, we're sitting tight, this is what we're doing, this is what we have.
Well, even Felipe Alou. Okay, Felipe Alou.
I was working in Montreal when that was all going down.
Well, and during the dark days when Felipe had that team ripped out from under, and he was paying. He was being paid very handsomely to continue to manage in the majors, but his first address on the opening of spring training, consider this a season of success if you don't lose 100 games.
Yep.
Because that was certainly the message he got from the people that he worked for. But then tell your players that we have zero expectation before you even throw a pitch. Whether it's accurate or not, you players don't want to hear that.
No, that's very difficult. Again, I've been through it. I went through it twice, actually, and it's not fun. I think eventually it makes you better because it forces you to pay attention to the different things around you that can make the team better, maybe without other people's help. So I think that's part of it, and I think that's really helped me. Going forward, but I can tell you when you go through it to begin with, it is really difficult.
Pierre, 4 years, not to belabor the point, but 4 years, they have no answer to the power play issue. That's four years now let me go through this.
Yeah,
four years through a bunch of different coaches and whoever had the power play. Marc Bergevin solidly behind them, and they lose the back-to-back to Columbus. Is it possible, because, you know, Bergevin's not going to go back within days of saying what he did about his coach, would Michel Therrien actually go to him and go, you want my resignation?
Oh, I can't see that happening. I'd be shocked. I can't. I mean, anything's possible, but I'd be very, very surprised. The one thing I remember, and you were one of the first people on this, what about bringing in a power play specialist? Remember we talked about that last spring? You were on that hard, really hard. And, you know, they decided to keep it in-house. And, you know, again, the rest is history. This is a tough one. This is going to be very interesting to see what the Canadiens do going forward. Very, very interesting. And I will say this again on the record. And if anybody would have sour grapes, it could be me. But that will not be, because I'm telling you straight up. I totally trust the Molson family, and in particular, I totally trust Jeff Molson. And if there's something they can do to make that team better, the Molson family will do it. I'm telling you, they will.
Because the last thing they want, and I don't know if they concern themselves with public public pronouncements, and which are louder than ever before, not in terms of volume, but certainly in terms of number, is they've almost become a joke.
Well, that's strong. That's a strong. I would never say that about any team. I mean, they're not the New Jersey Devils from 1983. You know, Mitch, come on, they're not that bad. But no, this
no.
Is
but since December the 3rd, since December the 3rd, they have been. They've been worse than
they're
that.
They're a frustrating team to watch right now. I watch all their games like you do, and most of the people listening to this do. They're a frustrating team to watch, and I will say this. Just mea culpa, and I told you this. I thought they'd springboard out of the Winter Classic. They have not. They've gone backwards. That should have launched them forward. should have launched them. The energy coming out of that game should have launched them forward, and they didn't.
Do you have, like, I spend no time on the All-Star game, but
I know,
but I know you'd rather be home with the family, but the fact that Ovechkin is not going,
well,
does that bother
you? Isn't going either.
And Jonathan Toews.
Yeah. That's tough. I don't know. I watched Ovechkin play last night. He looked okay.
He's fine.
That's what I'm saying. I watched him play last night.
Yarmer Yager's probably going, wait a minute. Wait a minute here. I came to see these guys.
But can I say one thing in defense of a player, and I mean this sincerely? I'm going to speak, I'm not running Ovechkin down at all. I want to speak in defense of Jonathan Toews. Jonathan Toews, if you think back since 2010, what he's been through. Since 2010, 3 Stanley Cups, 2 Olympic golds, trips to the Western Conference Final, Game 7 losses in overtime, just so much hockey, crazy amounts of hockey. And I kind of can see him maybe not feeling 100% saying, you know what, I could kind of heal up on a beach, it might be better for me. And I totally could understand that. Just like Nick Lidstrom, I could totally understand where Lidstrom was when the All-Star game was in Montreal. I totally understood that. That's where we kind of lose track on all this stuff, on the players. I thought about it today, sitting on the red eye last night, and it was so last night into today. I think the league's got to come up with a better format, how we pick the teams. And one of the things I think they need to do is put together a blue ribbon panel of coaches, managers, media, and players, and pick the teams. And everybody's name is out there. If you're on the committee, your name is out there. I think that'd be the best way to do it.
Yeah, but the game would still be.
I don't know if it, I want to give this 3-on-3 a chance. I don't know about that, Mitch.
Okay.
I think based on, just again, this is not a scientific experiment, but based on the little survey I've done, talking to the players that will be going, and some of them that aren't going, that wish they were going, they think 3-on-3 could work in this kind of a format. They do. Now, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. But 3-on-3, I think, has a better chance than 5-on-5 in an All-Star thing. I really do.